Our business is made only in a private context, so this is how we work and this is how it's the best.
What makes artists interesting to promoters? What makes a difference between a sold-out concert or half-empty one? And what can artists do to attract attention of audiences and promoters? To answer these questions, I needed to talk to a concert hall director. I'm very pleased that Timurs Thompsons, director of Latvian concert hall Lielais Dzintars, could join me for this conversation. As a director of a concert hall organizing hundreds of events in different genres, Timurs has great experience both in music performance and music promotion. Enjoy this conversation, and if you find it useful, please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on our social media. This podcast is created by InClassics, web development agency for musicians. We create beautiful and affordable websites full of useful features for musicians. You can find out more about us on our website inclassics.com.
Timurs, thank you so much for joining. Tell me a little bit about yourself, who you are and what you do and how you're connected to classical music.
So my name is Timurs Thompsons and I work already for 10 years as a manager for the classical and of course contemporary music, we can say. So for 4 years I was working as director of the Chamber Orchestra Sinfonietta Riga. I was working also for the Swedish radio for the Baltic Sea Festival. It was for 5 years, fantastic, beautiful festival. Mm-hmm. And then for 5.5 years, I'm already working as a CEO of the Liepāja Concert Hall Great Amber. A lot of music, different music, and just great buildings and so on.
So let's go straight to it. So what does it take for a classical musician today to get into a concert hall and to play concerts?
He has to be a professional, great musician first. I think the first task that we sing is the quality, of course. And then, of course, the whole bunch of things that we need also to sell this musician. And this is also a part that it is important for the musician.
What sells these days? Is it a big name or is it a special program? Is it repertoire? How to fill the concert hall with audience?
I think it's a whole system and the whole ecosystem of the profile of musician, the programmation, the picture that he has, the marketing material, how attractive is he for the audience, and if he's playing in the Great Hall or is he playing in the Chamber Hall or is it on the festival program. So it has to be negotiated rather individually. So there is no such a whole system, analytical system, how it is to be done. But of course, the interesting program, great quality, and of course, the accessibility to the marketing materials. Mm-hmm. Even the musicians are fantastically talented, but if the marketing cannot post any picture, quality picture, to say to the audience who doesn't know probably that he's fantastic, then it can be a bit difficult for us to promote him.
Wow, this is actually a surprising thing to hear as a kind of one of the top reasons for making a concert hall full with audience, because I think not a lot of musicians think about that, right?
Unfortunately, this is true. So of course, we understand why it is like that. So the musicians are focused all the time to increase the quality of their performing arts. And this is, of course, the main thing. But then the institutions like us, we have to sell the concerts. This is our thing because we are not financed 100%. So it's one part of our business. And then, of course, this is visual materials that are very important. So, and they are rather specific too, that we need to put a picture on a poster, for example, and then it has to be done rather well, that for example then we have to put some tags or some concert name that it's not for example over your face, and so there is a space that has to be left on the picture. So it's whole production system that is rather made specially for the organization like us. And of course then we have a series of pictures for the social media that we would love to have and to put on our website. Then probably there is if you have a video of a good quality of the previous concert, it's also needed rather well. So this is, you have to have the basic marketing kit, and it's rather important, especially for the new musician, young musician who comes on stage and tries to persuade us that we need to, you need to have us. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's an investment to be done because it's a financial issue too, but it's a financement that will come back to you after all.
I think that, yes, this should be like taught as a course, you know, how do you make a good picture? How do you make a good promo video?
And yes,
the, for sure, it takes some investment upfront to have that great headshots and to make a, maybe a small like 3 minute promo video, but it definitely pays off.
So and basically, I'm sorry, just disturbing you because when we think that an picture on an iPhone from your kitchen can be posted on the picture and it can be sold to the audience, I would say no. But still, when you are saying that, you just receive really like those, yes, the musicians kind of think that it's not a very important thing. But I mean, unfortunately, we have this commercial relationship with our audience too. Yeah. And this is an important part that we have, how we wrap the whole product.
Yeah. And it's also probably not only a question of having just pictures and videos. It's also about the stories that the musician tells about themselves, right? So like also the bios that you can use in a promo material. Because what I often see when we, for example, build websites is we go through a bio that starts born here, studied here, played in this kind of concert halls, and it's all very valuable information. But it's not really something that you can work with so easily, right? Because then...
Yes, the storytelling is important, of course, but... I must say that me as professional, it's not by the bio when I choose a musician. So it will be not the thing that I will read first. I will listen to the musician, how he's playing. And of course, if I listen to him live, it's the best thing.
Yeah.
And but I think it will be kind of also can be used as a marketing tool for our team when mm-hmm. they communicate about the artist,
right.
But definitely it will be not the first thing that I go through. Yeah. It will not be the biography of him, even though I mean some facts can be interesting for me.
You probably have a lot of people contacting you saying I want to play a concert here, right? Or do musicians themselves contact you, or is it mostly agents who write to you emails?
So it's both musicians and agents writing to us. So of course, in Latvia, there is a lot of musicians who are self-employed, mm-hmm. and they just promoting themselves that they would love to, especially in the field which is not classical music. Sometimes it can be also jazz or some folk mm-hmm. music too, which we are promoting to. And this is okay for us to work directly with the musician. But of course, then this is international agent who writing to us, and of course it's a bit easier even to work with the agent sometimes mm-hmm. because they already know the business part. It's easier to make negotiations, and it's also more understandable to what is the international standard for the touring, for example, mm-hmm. for the artist. So this is how it is. Yeah.
And in your time as CEO of the concert hall, did you invite someone who just a musician who just contacted you and said, Here, who I am, here is my program, here what I want to play, have me at the concert. Did this ever happen?
Well, for the local musicians that we know, usually it happens. It can happen like that. So especially when the new program that proposed, mm-hmm. for example, but usually we know them already.
Okay.
So with the unknown musician who writes us directly, it happens, but rather rarely.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually we have a strategy that we are choosing what we know because it corresponds to our values, to our ideas, to our programming, concept.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and it might be rather rarely than it really fit unexpectedly to our, dates or plans and what is around. Yeah. And but it might happen as a miracle.
So basically, it is worse. Like if you are a musician and you have something that you want to play, it is worse to send those emails. Yeah,
I think that it's worse to do that, especially for the moment that probably I will not take you as a musician, but I will take into account your existence already.
Yeah.
So this is a good thing already to say I'm here, hello, and I do something.
Yeah.
So you can be maybe you are interested to me. Not now, but maybe in 5 years, it can happen.
We had recently a podcast with Magdalena Gecka, and she was speaking about that whenever you play a concert somewhere, you should invite everyone, every possible agent, manager, reviewer, musician to come to your concert and listen to your live, because you never know, maybe someone listens to you and they like you and then they invite you to a concert or to a festival, and that's how it starts, like, growing this network.
I completely agree, especially our business is made only in a private context. So this is how we work, and this is how it's the best. So that's why, I mean, invitations and saying hello to the person that you invited, exchange few words with him just to see it, how he is. It's very important. The same we are doing with our agents. So I just was in Paris a week ago for my work, and of course I met some agents that we were working with, but I haven't seen, for example, them. It's completely different level of trust. It completely different kind of level of connection that we can have as an exchange. So it's very important to meet people in our work.
Absolutely, I think it's like if you want to be serious as a solo musician or as a chamber musician, and you want to create your own projects, then this personal connections and personal relationships, and also real personal relationships without having an agenda, but just to meet people, to be nice to them.
Absolutely, this is. You know, to have a glass of wine after the concerts, just to meet and to talk and create this kind of whole atmosphere all around. But anyway, nevertheless, still we're judging you as a professional, as a player, as a musician. And have you anything to say as a musician? What is your kind of qualities, artistic qualities? It's still will be the first thing, and not, of course, the beautiful pictures or naked pictures or whatever you can imagine in your life, what musicians also are doing. So, for me, at least, it doesn't work very well. So it still has to be a fantastic player.
How is it with you planning, for example, your upcoming season or upcoming two seasons? Do you have some direction that you think about where your concert hall needs to go? Is there like a core to the programming, and how do you try to put it together?
Yes, and I think it's individual for every concert hall. It depends on our strategy, and it's our geographical location, it's our experience with our audience had before already. We have to take all in account, and also our infrastructure possibility. I mean, big hall, smaller hall, so and every hall has it differently. So in our case, of course, we do have a strategy. It's the amount of the concerts already that we can make through the year. It is also the amount of the foreign musician, local musician that we can afford to bring. It's the format, otherwise it's a big stage or the chamber hall. So of course we have kind of strategy for every hall. For us as a concert hall, in the west of Latvia, in the not very big city of 70,000 inhabitants, it's a concept of diversity that we bring. Especially, we are very lucky to have a symphony orchestra who makes the core programming. And then, of course, for the small cities like that, it's not possible to make just a classical symphonic music. So we just look around what happens around. So it's world music, jazz, contemporary music, educational programs, chamber music, and so on, dance, contemporary dance. So it's bring diversity to the to our audience. That is very important. So that's why we are kind of open-minded in that way.
Do you think it's possible to say what audiences prefer these days? Do you see a difference in ticket sales, for example, if the concert is just music, or if the concert has some kind of video, photo projections, and dancing, and so on, or is it not related?
I don't think that it's related much. And even though it might disturb some audience members that it's kind of, some video is overlapping the musician playing, and I think the genre itself, this augmented reality, this augmented experience of the music is very, very complicated, and it has to be done extremely well to combine each other. So, and especially I was working in this combining like a theater with the music, and theater it's another world, and music is another world too. They work in a different methods itself, and to combine them in a good quality, it has to be like done in a very good level. And I have seen also the failures in the systems. So I don't think that it's kind of the fact itself that it has to be, it doesn't have to be the main purpose to just make the multimedial. Mm-hmm. It has to be a sense of why we make it multimedial, okay. And then going from that. And then it's a successful story, then mm-hmm. it's good, of course, it's interesting when it's, you know, multi-genre or multidisciplinary, or what we are calling now. But it shouldn't be always like that. It can be a classical concert, which is sold out, mm-hmm. and the complicated, multi-crazy thing that is kind of going, that the audience are not interested to that.
But do you see that, for example, programming, yes? If we put in a program Mozart and Beethoven, you know, and Brahms, and the audience knows those names, the audience knows the pieces, they know what they're coming, what they're getting. Or if you put some modern composers, contemporary music, do you see a difference there in attendance?
Well, unfortunately, yes. So this is a true fact. But nevertheless, of course, we have to understand that we have a mission. Not just to bring the classical composer mm-hmm. like the 300 times, but of course to educate our audience on the new music. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is extremely important to our diversity too, and diversified program that we are putting in. And what I would say probably the interesting thing, completing to the multi-dimensional aspect, that we have to search for the new forms of the concert, how to attract mm-hmm. the new audience. I mean, if we continue with the Beethoven and Mozart and so on, of course we will have the audience, but it will be the same audience all the time. Yep. And then when we're asking how to bring new audience, and then we have to think completely different methods. So starting, with the kind of cinema concerts or bringing kind of a new format. We had like a fantastic concert of the sleeping concert with the Martin Feldman piece for like 1 hour and minimalistic repeating. And we brought kind of all the carpets and the people could lie over there, and it kind of the concert was sold out so quickly mm. because the people wanted to experience kind of a new thing, and this is kind of the thing that we are looking for. So, but of course, I mean, I'm not denying the classical values that are also important as in our part of our heritage. But of course, the new compositions are important, but we have to put it in a good context. And it's what Barenboim who told that he doesn't like ghettos, and he knows what ghettos means. And also in the music, just to put only classical repertoire or only contemporary repertoire, the best way is to combine them right. all the time and not to make only classical yeah. and only contemporary music.
Do you think that artists themselves, when they create the program, they should think just a little bit about this commercial aspect? That when they put together a program, that they should think, like, is there something that audience can hold on to and go and know this name and then add there something different? Or the artist should be completely free from commercial aspect and just program whatever they want and then try to find the audience for that?
Well, first of all, they have to program a good music, so it's the most important thing. So this is my advice to everyone. Of course, we take in account our audience, what are they experience and what we would like to have as an experience, and knowing that we would probably love to play in the full house than in a when there is no audience at mm-hmm. all. So. But of course, we put the artistic quality the first things. Mm-hmm. Also, in our marketing system, we don't push the artist to bring some, products that sell mm-hmm. out. And I think in the Baltic states, we are more flexible in that in Western Europe, they are more conservative in that choices than mm-hmm. us. So, but I think the good way is kind of take in account the audience, but also to bring them some new thing that they mm-hmm. haven't heard.
Thinking of different formats, what you said about having like mats in the concert yeah. hall, right? And it's very interesting, and I think it starts to become inevitable that we have to go into some other direction, because also I feel, as classical musicians, we need to compete with Netflix, and whatever other like entertainment there is, like that you just turn on at home. And so we need to give something extra, not just because as much as even as a musician, I want to just come to the concert hall and share good music. But I'm afraid that at these times, it's just not enough. There needs to be always some extra value to that.
Exactly. So, and this is... we also know that the music has also social value, of course, and we in the concert hall are usually thinking only, you know, on the full houses, and or would love to have a full houses, and of course that our concerts are attended. But well, it's probably that I feel in Kvizilepa concert hall, and especially that we are going to become the European Capital of Culture in 2027. Mm. So that there is a need to find a new ways and new forms how to get this added value to the mm-hmm. music and to attract the people who are less connected to the music and to become maybe less snobbish in that way, mm-hmm. and just trying to connect to the less, you know, favorable places, people from there.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Liepāja, you said there are what, around 70,000 people living here. You had last year Berlin Phil playing in your concert hall.
This year, yes.
This year, yes. This year you had Berlin Phil playing there. How did that happen?
I mean, unfortunately, the reason why it happened is not the happiest reason at all. So it's all happened because of the war happened in Ukraine.
Okay.
The Berlin Philharmonic had to have a concert in Odessa Opera, and they planned already in advance. And already in the middle of February, they called us when the war officially hasn't started, but mm-hmm. They understood that the flights were not working anymore. And even if they go by the plane itself, insurance doesn't work anymore for Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So, and they of course understood that it's not possible to organize the concert itself. Okay. So they called us in the middle of February asking if we would love to host them. Of course, how it happened that they can have my number, it's another story, but of course we have some Latvians in the in the Berlin Phil who are fan of us. So it's very important, you know, the Berlin Philharmonic are governed by the musician in mm-hmm. general, so they can suggest things to do. So it was a suggestion also from Gunnar Supatniks, the double bass player that you know
right,
very well.
Yes.
And yes, and we are friends with him too. And of course, it was complicated. Of course, there was few sleepless nights for me to understand that it's a once in a lifetime, and it's complicated to organize in few months. But I told I'm doing that, no problem. How it will finish, and I still have my two kidneys, so I haven't sold to finance this concert. So I think it went very well.
This is great. How quickly was the concert sold out?
I must say we announced the concert in the national news at like 7:30. And of course, the one part of the most expensive tickets went rapidly away. I must say that we didn't sell one ticket for this concert, so there was one ticket left at the end. But it usually happens because of some, you know, someone who gave tickets back and so on. But and I must say, this concert came rather late.
Yes.
So, and we had to, we didn't have like our ordinary funding mm-hmm. for this, you know, it's quite rather expensive to have Berlin yeah. Phil. And the tickets were rather expensive for a certain, for the best seats. And mm-hmm. we considered that the people who kind of paying for that tickets are supporting this concert mm-hmm. that it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we were lucky that all the tickets were 200 euros for Liepāja. Mm-hmm. It was a lot, but they were sold out. Yeah. So this is a great thing.
Yeah, but it's like, as you say, it's like once in a lifetime opportunity to have this. But I hope it's not going to be once in a lifetime. Maybe they...
In 2027, they're coming back with Andris Nelson.
So, oh, okay, fantastic.
Yes, this is I reveal it already, but I mean, it's already what is set up, and I think that it shows also the relationship we had during this project, kind mm-hmm. of 2 months and a half that we worked rather hard. Usually those concerts are planned, you know, 5 years in advance or something, but now we are planning 5 years forward mm-hmm. For the European Capital of Culture that will have the main concert in Liepāja.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. And in this Liepāja concert hall, you created a digital concert hall. Do you record now every concert that is happening there? What do you do with these recordings where people can listen to it?
Yes, first of all, digitalization was a long-term project mm-hmm. for us. It didn't happen just during the COVID, but the COVID made it a bit faster.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is an important strategy for the regional concert hall, especially, we have limited amount of people who are around us. So this is was a strategy how to bring more music to the audience all around the world. Mm-hmm. Why not? It's not as easy as it could be. Record every concert. It has to be done with the rights. Mm-hmm. It's not very easy to obtain the rights from all the artists. Okay. So this is also an investment, because to record the concert, it is a money spent. So now we built amberdigitalhall.com, which mm-hmm. is a platform where we serve as a concert, is a place for the streams, mm-hmm. and also as a, you know, now we have a collection of our concert as a heritage, mm-hmm. So which is also important to us. Mm-hmm. So not we don't record every concert, okay. especially because it has to be investment. So we mm-hmm. have we choose the concert that we record, and it also depends on the funding that we mm-hmm. receive, and this is how we work. Now we have a big discussion on the terms. We try to make it as on demand, as we say, mm-hmm. kind of when we have to buy some tickets to mm-hmm. that. So, but I was talking with my French colleagues a lot about this topic, and we think that in the future it will become more as a public service in terms of that we will open our concert free for the people that can kind of get access really more easily to our content and to bring more users to our website. So because of course we cannot compete with Berlin Digital Concert Hall, mm-hmm. for example, which has a really huge department yes. for the development of this, but it's also the whole concept of the Digital Concert Hall that we have is taken from the Swedish radio. They called it Bild Radio. It's mm-hmm. kind of the great sound, which is for music is important, mm-hmm. but kind of to visualize the yeah. music. And we don't have, we have like robot cameras. It's not the, you know, people who film yeah. it like in a great production in television productions. But of course the quality is high enough to see, it's the IGD quality, but still it's the sound is more important than the video production itself. So, and this is a concept that we have, and I think it will go soon, like free mm-hmm. for everyone to bring the diaspora, for example, people from all around the world.
This is a great, great point, and I think that sometimes music organizations, concert halls, think that doing something like digital concert hall will bring a profit, and it seems from the things that I hear from people who do it that it's close to impossible these days, at least at this stage, to bring like a digital classical music program as a profitable product, and to open it for the public to drive attention, to drive traffic to website, to simply get known by the wider audience is incredibly important, and this is the way to do it. And of course it takes upfront investment, but as you say, also I think it's very, very good that you have robot cameras, you know, mm-hmm. because simply like the price of production goes significantly down when you don't need to have that many people working.
Exactly.
And it's better to, you know, in this way, if it makes it affordable, if it makes it possible to create good quality content, and that content can be repurposed in so many ways, because you, of course, you can have like that 1 hour recording concert, but really how many people would sit down at home and watch the whole concert?
I totally agree with you. And this is an important question to us, especially in the terms of future listener who will be digitally very advanced, mm-hmm. like my parents are, for example, who are sitting on the webs and watching for everything. But I mean, in 10, 15 years, there can be situations that probably they cannot attend the concert mm-hmm. physically or mm-hmm. geographically, mm-hmm. but they still love to be a part of the community. Mm-hmm. And I think they can follow us also on a distance. Yeah. So there is a value for that. Of course, there is a places where the music is not accessible, like, you know, in the smaller regions or the elderly houses, for example, mm-hmm. which it can be integrated mm-hmm. Also where people doesn't have access to it. Yeah. So I think there's really big social value to this. And of course, we understand that, for example, that not everyone wants to sit on Friday evening in the chairs, kind of statically, without, you know, in exploring the whole rules of the visiting the concert hall.
Mm-hmm.
But I can have a concert with my glass of wine in my kitchen when it's streamed from the house, and it's also one of the options. Of course, it's not the same experience, and we are not comparing the mm-hmm. experience of coming to the concert hall and sitting on in front of your screen and your audio system, maybe, but it still has a value to reach the audience. And of course, we hope that somehow it will bring the audience back to us. We think that during the COVID time, when we had our own program mm-hmm. With the digitalization, it brought us, of course, new audience, also diaspora, Latvian diaspora, who following from all over the world, starting mm-hmm. from Brazil to the Australia, they want to look what's happening in mm-hmm. our hall. But it's also helped us to bring back the musician, the audience after the COVID time.
Right. So I also wanted to ask you, like, about the audience and COVID. Do you feel like the audience already came back in the same numbers, or it's still far away?
For us, yes.
Okay.
We came to the same level as before, so, but it's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we are thinking that probably digitalization helped us to kind of to not disconnect people from the usual experience to listen to the music itself, to experience the music. I think it was a crucial point. But for many organizations, it didn't happen mm-hmm. like this. So mm-hmm. they are still looking for the new ways how to bring audience back, because people try different things, different stuff. So, and this is, I was talking with the Symphony Orchestra of Lyon, mm-hmm. and they have a beautiful hall and l'auditorium, and they are really looking for the new forms of concerts, mm-hmm. how to attract the people back.
Right. It's actually, I want to come back to what you said, that you are not trying to replicate a live concert experience with a digital concert hall. And this is so important, because it is simply, very few of us can have such a, like, audio system to come close to some kind of like orchestra sound or live music. The screen is, the TV screen is there, the children are running around, right? It's impossible. So we don't need, we shouldn't try to compete with this like real experience, but we need to try to provide experiences that can get people through the door back to the concert hall. And so this is absolutely, I believe that something like digital concert hall will helps you to come back to the same numbers as pre-COVID.
Yes, I think that is a kind of really long-term strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about the high audio system, but at the end we see that big part of our audience watch our concert on the phones.
Of course, yeah.
And this is like, I'm thinking, no, but we hope that they're watching the big screens with a fantastic system. No, it's on the phone. And I mean, of course, it's not that we are expecting, but it happened, it's a reality.
Absolutely.
And but yes, in the long terms, it's, as you told, it's not the same. We don't compete with that, so it's different experience that you get, and why not this part of your experience as concert?
Yeah, I also wonder, like, what I'm all the time thinking when I'm going through my like Instagram or Facebook, and I get come across the content from musicians, is that most of the time my phone is without sound, you know, and then even sometimes like I would still watch a little bit of that video when somebody's playing, but there is no sound. And I constantly think, like, we as musicians, we should really start making a content where we can publish ours at like 2 minutes, 3 minute, 1 minute excerpt from the concert, but there still should be some text, because most of us, we watch all the things with no sound.
Exactly. And the subtitles are important that way. Yes, exactly. When we put also a teasers or a publicity, so we put the subtitles only because of that. I mean, you're sitting in the bus, you're scrolling, and you don't want to put your sound, and then kind of, what's happened? So I don't hear it, and so that is kind of
so basically
thing.
We should do like in the movies when it's like dramatic music playing and then difficult passage coming up.
yes, it's one of the experience for the for the accessibility too.
But also these days, artists, we need to communicate with our audiences, right? And like, so with digital concert hall, do you also do interviews before, after the concerts and things like that?
It would be the best thing, of course, that we can do to make this kind of extra experience mm-hmm. in the over there, but not, we are not doing that at the moment. And I think that's kind of just demands a bigger team to do that, because it's a production part, which is very important. And of course, it's a planning time, because it's mean it has to be negotiated with the agent, for example, that this time has to be devoted to the interviews and so on and so. So it's just lack of the workforce that we have at the moment. But it is important thing. What we, for example, do for the people in the digital concert hall, we just add the program of the concert and all the description for free. So I mean, you have to pay it in the live concert, but when you have the concert in the digital concert hall, so you don't need to pay extra for the program. So and then you can sit and read it. But for the communication and the this digital audience development, as we are working with our physical audience, if we have our physical people who we communicate with. So in the same way, we have to build our digital audience. So it's a time consuming, and it's really the other ways of communication with them. And this is how we grow that. So in the concept of the digital concert hall, we decided that it has to be also very interactive. So because they have to feel the people, they don't listen to that alone. So, but there is a community, the whole community who is listening to that. It's important, even in the digital world. So there is some options like a chat option, or, you know, you can press a heart if you like the concert. Everyone is see that you kind of love this this place. And of course, we integrated, for example, such a, such a things like e-commerce. So we can go, I mean, you're listening to the concert, and then you just say, oh, I can go some shopping. So and we have all the souvenir lines that we had in, integrated there. So just to distract yourself a bit, if you are a bit bored, some, or you want to have some, you know, time, other time to make, to look for some presents, for example.
This is a great approach.
So, of course, it's connected to the music. So it's not like, you know, don't shop something that is disconnected to the music, but still it's kind of interactive. And I mean, we'll see how it will develop. But of course, it's not an easy stuff, the digitalization for everyone at the moment.
But it sounds like a very legitimate strategy, you know, like especially like with the putting it all together, putting the art, putting the social aspect and the and putting the commerce aspect, is it's a great combination. So well done and congrats.
Well, then you say we have to bring a concept and we think we made a great thing. The others say is to tell that they think is great.
Yes.
And please consume it, please.
Yes. So, do you guys focus a lot on social media?
Yes, of course, it's very important. Our, I mean, for the younger audience, this, the social media importance is not as relevant for as for the audience of my age, for example, and older. The young audience is not on Facebook anymore at all, so it was surprising for us. So, but actually, yes, we have a lot of followers, of course, for the concert hall.
Do you guys do TikTok?
Not yet, but it's we have a new youth project from Norwegian project that we are making called Cirque Musique. It's like a long-term project that we combine circus music with the contemporary music, so it's an international project. So when we have this, our one person who is who told, it's time.
It's time. Yes. For me, you know, also like social media is actually quite new, and. As a musician, I was always a part of the orchestra, so I didn't have to do my own like social media things. And now having a company, of course, we need to reach people, and having this podcast, we want people to listen to it. So we started investing a lot of time into social media, and it's a full-time job, or like two full-time jobs, for sure. Just to create any kind of meaningful content for social media, crazy. Crazy amount of work.
I couldn't do this myself, for example. If I were a musician, it wouldn't be possible for me. I don't know. So that's why it has to be kind of a professional who stands next to you. But of course, it's a question of financial things. It's not as easy. But of course, if you just have some IT skills, or, you know, some media thing skills to do, or, you know, how to cut a video, or how to put the subtitles in this. So I think it might be teached in the academy or conservatories, all those things.
Absolutely, but I think this is again, like, you know, we still, for some, maybe also in already my generation, I was thinking like, oh my god, TikTok, it's like, it's something, you know, it's not for us. And then now more and more I see, no, it is very much for us, because we can, it doesn't mean that you have to make bad quality content. You can still produce great quality content and put it on all of those social media platforms to grow your audience, to get people interested in what you do. And in the end, this is what we are, what we do. We musicians, we want to share our music with people. So we know the times are changing, and of course the main thing we need to focus sharing that music from stage, but we should also attract audiences from all of the platforms and channels that we have.
Yes, I think that we still have this a bit snobbish aspect. Then, I mean, yeah, all the probably people who are not educated to that, why should we do something for them? But it's how we reach the audience, and I would be happy if the musician, of course, doing something like that. I mean, we live in the world where a lot of information, we find a lot of information, and it will be very nice if scrolling the phone, there will be some also, you know, a quartet of Schubert who appears sometimes, why not?
But also I want to focus one very simple subject. When I was growing up in Ukraine, my family and we didn't have a lot of money for me to go to masterclasses to Paris or to Berlin or to London, you know. I had to do a crowdfunding campaign to go to play my exam in London, you know, for studying double bass. And for me, the only access to this like kind of quality content and quality education was through YouTube, you know. And in fact, my teacher saw me on YouTube, and that's how we met, and that's why I went to London to study. So for me, the internet made everything possible in my life. And so I always say that for musician to do a good content online, it's not about self-promotion. It is not about showing who this is me, look at me. It's about thinking about all of those people all around the world that you can provide so much value to, you know, like through your great education, through your great talents, through your genius. And then you can share this genius with others to inspire them either to do what you do or to come to your concerts. Or so social media is not just self-promotion, it's for others.
But, I mean, not everyone can do it, of course. It's special, but of course, in this competitive world, of course, it's a bonus if you have an option to do this, yes.
Yeah.
But still, I will be a bit this old school guy who is saying this. Don't forget that music is more important than everything else.
Of course, absolutely. That's why also I think that musicians should always go for like some like good social media manager, because now that I'm also doing the websites, I'm starting to connect with a lot of people, and there are musicians who decide that maybe playing is not the main thing that they want to do, and they go into web development or social media or things like this. So you can always find a good manager who would help you, and it is important, because in the end of the day it also helps marketing, it helps sell concerts if people have a big following. What I wanted to ask you, it's always curious for me, how come that music does not make enough money to cover what we do? So there is no concert that makes enough money by selling tickets, right? Right?
Rather rarely, I would say. Of course, there are commercial success, but I'm not really bothered by this fact. So when we talk about the professional arts at the moment, so with the musicians who kind of trained in the conservatories, and so it's first of all, it's all the educational system. It's a very expensive one. Mm-hmm. So, but we understand the value of it. So the arts, professional art, was founded from the Middle Ages. So it was never actually could cover the expenses of it. So first of all, it was made by monks, then it was by the kings, and then it came, you know, through the French Revolution or whatever it was. So the public money, the governments also co-founded the process of it. So of course, in European and American schools, they are a bit different, but there is anyway, there is a part who paints the part which is missing. And I think it's okay. We shouldn't be ashamed of it. This is a great artistic and social value of the music. We would love that the audience and the people who come to our audience, they are intelligent audience, that they, you know, it's not our life. We are not based on, you know, I had one conductor who told we cannot go to the sky with a sausage. So it's also with a kind of something more, you know, other values that we have to add to this. So, and music can bring those values to us, and it has to be paid by the other government or private partners. Or I'm not ashamed of it at all.
How do you go about finding money? So, of course, there is part probably that covered by government, yes. But you also write your own proposals for foundations, right?
Yes.
How do you find these foundations? And how do you think of projects that can feed those foundations?
Yes, I mean, luckily, of course, we are funded also partly by government, so it's a good thing. So, of course, we also have private sponsors, and this is in Liepāja, we are very lucky with it. So there are people who believe in arts and want to have our organization, special organization, who kind of unite these people, who are a bit richer than the average.
This is amazing, and because I heard it's hard in Latvia to find sponsors for culture.
Yes, it is. And in Liepāja, we're privileged to have this. So it's coming, I think, from the history also of the city and the people who really love music too there. And of course, it's one part, it's the ticketing part. But then, of course, we would love to have some extra things. And there are special funding opportunities for that. It's not easy. All the European funds or international funds are usually very bureaucratic. And it's rather difficult to manage them by the private person or a musician. So, of course, when we take in part in that, we take in consideration our, you know, stuff, if it's how trained is it for this project and so. But we're realizing two projects at the moment. So one European project and one Norwegian, European grant, it's called EE, Norway grant project. So, and it's also about our capacity building, because international projects are a bit complicated, so we have to take the values of our, for example, Icelandic or Norwegian partners, the different methods how we are working to kind of meet together, to a lot of talking. It's a slow process, but it's extremely valuable for the organization to put us on a different level with the others, to compare us and to know our capacity. And it's always bring something very interesting in this international project. And of course, yes, the money founding in itself, it's a whole process. So I think, well, the last project, it was me who was writing it by itself, like, you know, 30, 40 pages of a lot of texts. But I think it's very valuable for that.
But so if musician wants to find this, because of course we all know in our own country, like in Canada, there is Canada Council for the Arts, where you can apply for funding. In Latvia, there is
Capital Fund,
Capital Fund for Arts. And so we know in our local areas where to apply, and you can always call them and write to them and ask for advice how to do it. But with this international project, how do you find them? Is it someone suggesting for you, or you're Googling?
I think just from my experience already, I'm lucky to to work long enough to know the funding opportunities that we have. But for example, in the region, which is very valuable for the artists, is a mobility program, which we are also using, but a mobility program for the artists. And I mean, there is several organizations who are working on that. I mean, in every country, there is kind of French Institute or Goethe Institute or Nordic Council of Ministries, so which are already have some interesting program. Just follow them on Facebook. Why not? And they probably will post something, and or add them as a, you know, in the email list, put them, and they will kind of. Already you can do it as a small kid, why not to follow the information which is connected to the industry? So, and this is how it happens. But of course, as an individual musician, really these mobility programs which are working are fantastic and they're very useful. And of course, during the studies, Erasmus is the best thing for that. But then, of course, I would say not for a musician, but the managers. Then, of course, it's a professional thing that we have to know which organization provides some extra finances and how to do them. So it takes time, of course, to know them. And it's good. So I would say it's bureaucratic, but I mean, I'm happy that we are doing that.
This is great. It's great advice also for how to find it, how to just follow the newsletters and Facebook and Instagram, and the information will find you if you're looking for it.
Exactly. Just open yourself to those organizations and say, I'm here. And I mean, it definitely will bring some results.
Yeah. And I guess it never hurts to just ask an email, right? And to,
absolutely. And to ask absolutely, for consultations. Advice. And they're actually seeking for those people who would love to be active and who are seeking for this information. Not everyone wants to go also abroad or to be active in such a way. But I was, for example, when I was a student. So, and I used a lot of public money for other countries. So I think I became a bit of professional of that, how to use foreign money for my purpose.
This is great. So you were an orchestra manager, and now you are CEO of Concert Hall. So you were in a position first when you were talking to concert halls, trying to propose concerts, right? And now you're in a position where you're deciding which concerts. Do you see what you could have done better back being an orchestra manager to organize concerts for the orchestra?
Yes, I think that there are things that I could do better, but it was only also because I was very young as a director. I became, I was 25. So, I mean, this was a process when you know all the ecosystem too. And, but it gave me a lot of experience, of course. I think that, of course, individual, in a professional business, we can make some individual contacts and trying to, you know, sell us individually. For example, when I was an orchestra director, I was thinking that the touring is made really that you, you know, writing email to the concert hall by yourself and trying to organize everything by itself. But it's not happening like that. So usually the international touring, for example, usually it happens by the agents. Mm-hmm. And I had to build more relationship, not with the institution by itself, but with the agents who hold the whole relationship in the professional business, for example. So I think that it was the thing, if I would become the director now, so this is how I will be. I will go negotiate with the agents and not with institutions itself. Of course, locally it's different with the kind of Latvian ecosystem and maybe Baltic ecosystem. We always, you know, but if you want to have a bigger, longer tours, and so it happens differently.
This is great for me to know. This is, yeah, because you sometimes think that, like, okay, you know, I can write to everyone, I can call everyone, I can also go and meet people. But it's as you said before, it's easier for a venue to work with the agent that they know, that the agent that knows what they do, that you write your contracts and everything is just easier than to work directly with artists.
Absolutely, especially it happens with international touring. So it's way easier. So we don't probably, it's very rarely that we can build really an international tour if there is no kind of professional agent who makes all the parts of the touring all together. So this is my advice.
Yeah. And as for speaking of advice, what advice can you give to young musicians who are still, you know, maybe in a school practicing or already out of the school and trying to establish a solo career or chamber career or even an orchestra career and who want to progress in this career? What advice can you give? What are the steps that they should make to be successful in their career?
First of all, I think they have to understand what do they want to do in their life. So in terms, I mean, do you want to be a soloist or do you want to become a chamber or an orchestra musician? So there are two paths to take. First of all, of course, I mean, it's traditional. Of course, there are exceptions in that. If you want to be an orchestra musician, I mean, go to work a lot with this material, orchestra material, try to make international projects. I mean, there are plenty of them in Europe who kind of invite some musicians. I mean, there is exchange programs and so try to do that as much as possible that you can do in summer residences, summer projects, and don't be afraid to play as much chamber music as you can because for free or whatever and try to kind of, if you have a simple web or Facebook kindlist page, don't be afraid to share it with the world, even though it's something small, but at least that you are trying to do that. Of course, if you want to become a soloist, it's a bit another path, so don't be afraid of the competitions. So even though it's not the aim to win, but just to, you know, show itself. I mean, we know Lukas Geniušis didn't win the Tchaikovsky competition, but I think he's one of the most famous from that, from the... from that year, and I think that that's also a good thing to know. So this is a second approach to that. But of course, soloist demands a bit more. So it's also to build a profile of yourself, a website from you can receive it. I mean, you can have some more professional photo shoots just to make your professional profile more accessible. So this is kind of two passes to go. But don't forget, as I'm saying again, the music and your skills are even more important than everything else. We have the cases when there is nothing, there is no marketing, but I mean, you are such a great artist that, I mean, we will take you even without any photo.
Well, this is a great advice. And if you guys, if someone needs a website, we build great websites. So if you want to be a professional musician and you want to grow, then in classics.com, we have a very, very good portfolio. So please go and check us out.
But, and this is a good thing because, I mean, someone who is a musician who building a profile for you is way better than you take the advertisement company who doesn't understand at all what is your idea and what is your nuances. And this, I mean, is the best thing to have musicians who are working for the musicians. So do it.
Thank you. And thanks for being a guest. Really appreciate it. And it was a great conversation and a lot of useful things for me. And I'm sure for the audience as well. So yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here.